You are listening to You, Me, and an Album, episode 150. I'm Al Melchior.
There's a pop element to the way he, you know, puts his music together. And then, yeah, so this is definitely a more stripped down version of what we're used to hearing from the Killers. And, you know, the instrumentation is, I hear 12 string in there. I hear string instruments in there. If I'm not mistaken, I heard harmonica in there as well. So all these different instruments and colors that they, you know, were able to put in the music.
That was Adrian Sutherland talking about the Killers' 2021 album Pressure Machine. Adrian was previously the lead vocalist and guitarist for the Canadian band Midnight Shine, and he released his first solo album When the Magic Hits in 2021. That album earned Adrian a Juno Award nomination for Contemporary Indigenous Artist of the Year. Adrian's second album, Precious Diamonds, was just recently released on March 15th. Adrian, I really appreciate you taking some time out, joining me on here to talk about a favorite album of yours. So welcome to You, Me, and an Album.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat with you.
And likewise, I've been really looking forward to this, looking forward to talking about this Killers album. A band that I know has been, you know, one of the more popular rock bands in recent years, and I don't know that much of their discography at all. So this was probably an unusual place for me to kind of dip into it, but and I think maybe that's all the better. But we'll get onto that shortly. Also, as I mentioned in the intro, you have an album that, as we're recording this, has just been out for a few days. Now, by the time that this podcast is published, it'll have been out for a few weeks, but people should definitely check it out. We'll talk about that album in a little while. And I also understand you're working on a book. I have some questions about that as well. So one thing I want to ask you, though, Adrian, before we talk about music is I'm just curious about where you are talking to me from, because on your website, if I understand correctly, you're playing soon in Ottawa. So are you actually there now, or are you at home?
I'm actually in Ottawa. I arrived here yesterday and had some media stuff going on here today and a little bit tomorrow. And the show is tomorrow night at the National Arts Center.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Is this a one-off show, or do you have some other dates coming up as well?
No, it's really a one-off show. I did another album promoting show in Toronto the week before, and this is the second one that I'm doing to promote the release of the new album here in the city of Ottawa.
All right, fantastic. I spent a whole summer in Ottawa. It's awesome. So a little bit jealous. All right, well, let's talk about the Killers. And before we really dig into Pressure Machine, I want to ask you about your relationship, certainly with the album, but also, were you a fan of the band when that album came out? Because it's only been out for a few years now. Were you a fan of them, or was it more that the album, you know, drew you into their work?
I was a fan of this band prior to this album. I listened to a lot of their music over the course of maybe, I only recently discovered them maybe 5 years ago. So I've never heard of them prior to that. So they're, I guess in some ways they're fairly new to me. And yeah, so I was already a fan, and I've been listening to, you know, all, I think this was their seventh studio album, I believe. So I've listened to most of their prior albums and music in the last little while.
Okay, so you had listened to some of the older albums,
yes,
before getting this one, maybe just a year or two then, yeah, ahead of its release.
Yeah, yeah.
So was it a release then, you know, based on discovering them a couple years before, that you were excited that they had a new album coming out?
Yes, I was. You know, we were. How did I discover this album? I saw them listed on the in one of the that whole Grammy submission process. I was going in because I'm a voting member, so I was going through the Americana genre, and I came across this album, and I said, "Wait a second, the Killers."
What?
Yeah, I was surprised to see that, and so I Obviously I voted for them that year, and then I of course I listened to the album afterwards because I was curious to hear, this album that was sort of in a different place than I thought I would probably find it in.
Well, for those who don't know the album, that this hopefully explains my comment about this is a weird place to kind of dip in for me to dip into their discography because, right, I think it's fair to call it an Americana album. And I'm glad that, as I usually do, but not 100% of the time, that I didn't read anything about this album before I put it on for the first time because, yeah, the first couple of tracks I was like, wait, what? Did I put on the right band? Did I put on the right album? This is the Killers. It barely sounds like them. So, yeah, pretty interesting change for them and for Brandon Flowers. So I'm glad I'm not alone in that reaction. So what was it like then the first time that you put the album on?
I certainly felt I could certainly feel a little bit of inspiration coming from Bruce Springsteen and the music. I could hear that right away. So that was kind of like a first sort of like aha. I kind of hear the inspirations already in the first few songs.
I was born right here in Zion, God's own son, his Holy Ghost stories and bloodshed never scared me none.
So that was like one of the first reactions I had, and I just really love the type of songs that are almost, telling a story or a cinematic kind of a, way of telling stories through music. So those are the two things I really enjoyed. And I had to, keep looking deeper as sort of went on listening to the album to know, what was behind their decision to make an album like this.
And I mean it's an interesting backstory. We'll certainly I think we'll wind up getting into that. But I do want to know why you chose this album because if I'm remembering correctly, Adrian, I think you had a short list of two, and the other one was Nevermind, which was one of the first albums covered on this podcast going back more than 3 years ago. And it's kind of funny because when I did that episode, and I told somebody I know about it, and I had just recently started the podcast, and she said, "Well, doesn't everybody already know that album?" And I'm like, "I know all the songs they played on the radio, but there's still the other half of the album." And I'm of a generation that's a little bit older and maybe wasn't as tuned in to Nirvana in 1991. Why? Actually, as I'm asking you the question about the Killers, I'm kind of interested in both cases why those were albums you wanted to talk about.
Well, I guess if you look at sort of the more recent music and album that I really enjoy and where I am in my life now, it would be, the Killers, Pressure Machine album. And then if you go back, if I go all the way back to where music really, I think, had an impact on me and my life, it would go all the way back to high school. And that album, Nevermind, I think everyone was listening to it obviously back then, and it was everywhere. And I just remember, having my own CD for that album as well. And we played that song with, my friends, all my high school friends and kids, guys I grew up with and stuff. So it had such a I guess a big influence on me in those years, especially later on when I first started writing music. There were definitely some Nirvana influences in some of the writing. My first attempts of writing music way back in my late teens, early 20s.
Okay. Flipping over to the Killers, you're saying that this resonates more with where your music is at today. What are some of the ways in which this album does resonate for you?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I really, like some of the things I could really relate to in this album is they're talking about this quiet town as one song on the album that I really enjoy listening to. It's probably my favorite song on the album. It's about just some of the lyrics, like, you don't even have to deadbolt your door at night, and you're used to not be able to have to do that. Talking about, opiate deaths and that opiate crisis too in that part of the world, which is something, we're dealing with over, pretty much everywhere. I know it's a huge issue. Where I come from, it's a small remote flying, village, and in the last, oh, I don't know, month, we had 11 opiate deaths, and it's those are so, and it's a problem we've had for quite a while now. And so those are some of the things that really kind of pulled me in, because you relate to those sort of stories, because you're impacted, in your own life, by those types of difficult circumstances we sometimes find ourselves in.
When we first heard opioid stories, they were always in whispering tones. Now banners of sorrow mark the front steps of childhood homes.
That particular song for me, is one of my favorites on the album. And again, it's just about telling those really, stories that are important, that are true. And not that, most, like, not that other music out there is not important, but I think for me, I've always tried to write about those people that have touched my life. And a lot of the music I make today is about themes like that, I guess, and other themes, universal themes as well.
And I guess it would be a good opportunity again for those who aren't already familiar with Pressure Machine to talk a little bit about the background of the album. But before we do that, I was really stunned by what you just said, that there were recently 11 opiate related deaths in your community. Now, your village is at Wapiskat, and I looked it up on the map this morning. It's very far north in Ontario. Like you said, a fly-in village, not really connected to the larger cities and towns. How many people are in the village?
Oh, about 2,700 people that live in the community. So I guess it would be considered one of the larger communities on the coast. There are a total of, I think, five communities on the coast, on the west side of the coast.
This is James Bay.
That's right. Yeah.
Coast, right? Yeah. So that's a staggering, proportion of people to lose. No, it's awful. And you're right. It's something that's, in a lot of communities. And I wasn't, I knew that the Killers were a Las Vegas-based band. I didn't know that Brandon Flowers spent several years growing up in Utah, and a part of Utah that I've actually spent some time in, and it's absolutely gorgeous, but I've been there, as a tourist basically. And junior high school, he grew up in this town. I think it's pronounced Nephi. And I apologize to people from Utah if I pronounce that incorrectly. So he went back and interviewed people, and so there's interludes with the voices of the people that he interviewed. Really, I think, really a great job of splicing those in between the songs. He just paints this picture of this place where he's from, and the first two songs are, both either directly or tangentially about the opioid crisis. So right away you get the idea. It's not a really fun album.
No, it's, yeah, it's a bit of a heavy, a heavy album for sure. And it really makes you think. And in my own mind, I could almost picture this place, just based on listening to the songs in this in this album. The talking about the hills, the mountains, and the spirits that they, higher powers that they came across. And those are some of the, they almost sound, when you hear the one guy, the interviewing the one gentleman there, it almost sounds like, oh, okay, well, it must be the town, crazy guy or whatever, talking about spirits in the mountains. But that's actually a belief that indigenous people have about the spirits that they live in those mountains. You know, some of those spirits that we sometimes encounter are actually, we believe that that is their home. So when I heard that, I was like, aha, you know, this guy may have experienced something up there, you know, and at one point or another, and he knows about, you know, these things. So it was it kind of caught me off guard to hear that interview on one of as an intro in one of the songs.
So higher powers, higher powers, higher powers, higher powers than me, higher powers than me. I've seen them in the hill, you know, I've seen the spirits, you know, so definitely believe in the higher powers because I'm just little human, you know.
Again, it's just, it's such a, I don't know, well put together. And like I said, I totally picture this place in my head, as I'm listening to the record.
Have you ever been out to that part of the US?
No, I haven't. I've only ever been to the US once before, recently in last May to record my album down in Nashville. So.
Utah's it's an unbelievably beautiful place. But yeah, I think you can get the sense that it's almost like you have been there if you listen to this album. How well did you relate to, I mean, you already talked a bit about the opioid aspect, but Brandon Flowers touches on a lot of different aspects of small town life in the West. How much of that did you feel was relatable to you, growing up in Northern Ontario?
Yeah, I just having these sort of people are very religious and spiritual. You know, my grandparents were very, very spiritual, and we, you know, we were raised Catholic because a mission came on to, you know, had come up to our area and Christianized everyone and converted, you know, my great grandparents, my grandparents, that whole era. So we, you know, we were raised that way. So I just another that's just another way I was able to connect, you know, with these small communities are very, very religious, and they lean heavily on, you know, God and Jesus or higher power. So those were just some other things that that really jumped out at me, that reminded me of where, you know, where I come from. Because when you walk in almost every home, you know, you see the Last Supper on the back wall, and you know, you have the crucifix on the wall, and then you have, you know, usually have a picture of Mary and Joseph, and then that famous, you know. So people are very, you know, very religious in that way. It just kind of reminded me of where I come from. So some of those lines he was talking about in the music.
You know I believe in the sun, I ain't no backslider. But my people were told they'd prosper in this land.
So, well, you know, we're both focusing somewhat on the lyrics here, but I do want to talk about the music, and that's the part, probably even more so than the lyrics, that was really a surprise to me because it is a relatively stripped down sound. And yeah, I mean the Springsteen influences, especially like Nebraska, the Nebraska album, it's right there. But I will say, and this, I don't know, tell me if you hear this at all, I actually felt like it was sort of a blend between Bruce Springsteen and the Gin Blossoms. Like there are songs where to me he sounded very much very, I'm trying to remember, Robin Wilson. It took me a second to remember the name of the vocalist.
Yeah.
And also just kind of the pop sensibility of it too, which to me is maybe stripped down wouldn't be the right word, but you know, the hit singles from the Killers tend to be, and I don't mean this as negatively as probably it's gonna sound, but they're very bombastic.
Yeah.
You know, so it's definitely toned down from that type of style.
Yeah.
Yeah, how did you relate to the album musically? We know, were there certain things that just, you know, you wanted to play over and over, or maybe, you know, parts where you thought, hell, you know, maybe here's something I can sort of in, e if either incorporate or sort of make my own, and you know, my own way in my own writing, that sort of thing.
I like, first of all, I like the way, I like the melodies, the way he's able to string together all these beautiful melodies with his voice. And yeah, you're right about, you know, it's sort of Bruce Springsteen meets the Gin Blossoms. That you, I definitely hear that for sure. And there's a, you know, there's a pop element to the way he, you know, puts his music together. And then, yeah, so this is definitely a more stripped down version of what we're used to hearing from the Killers. And, you know, his instrumentation is, I hear 12 string in there. I hear string instruments in there. If I'm not mistaken, I heard harmonica in there as well. So all these different instruments and colors that they, you know, were able to put in the music. I always enjoy the way. So one way I really enjoy the Killers band in all their music is just how they're voicing, how he voices his you know, the singing, how he sort of is able to voice you know, put it all together. I try to, you know, there's some music that I've written recently that that has influenced, you know, I definitely was influenced by the Killers and how they sing, how the singer, you know, voices all his lyrics and stuff, melodies. And I believe that influence is, you know, coming from, you know, Bruce Springsteen, because I can, there's the correlations between the two and how they are voicing, you know, certain phrases and stuff like that. So that's one way I'm really influenced by the Killers. And, you know, I've also been influenced by Bruce Springsteen as well. So, so to be able to use that in my music, you know, for example, on my album, we put a song on there called "The Feeling of Love." And if you were to listen to how I sing and deliver the vocals, and you probably might find, you know, hints of the Killers in there for sure, if you were to listen, because that's what I was actually, you know, influenced by. And that song was inspired by the Killers as well, their music.
We've got to find a point here. We've got to find the cure. We've got to understand why we're living in fear.
They certainly have had a very huge influence on me and in my music as well.
We'll have to go back and connect those dots. I probably wasn't listening hard enough when I gave the album a listen. So that's pretty cool. And that was also very cool for me to discover that Bruce Springsteen actually duetted with the Killers. I think it's a song from their second album that they did a new version of with Bruce Springsteen. It's fantastic.
And the decades disappear like sinking ships, but we persevere. God gives us hope, but we still fear what we have known. The mind is poison. Castles in the sky sit stranded, vandalized. With drawbridge is closing.
That's I didn't know that. I'll have to go.
Well, I'm happy to share that information. Yeah, it's a song called Dustland, and I mean the version with Springsteen is Dustland. Oh. The original, let's see if I can look it up real quick. A Dustland Fairy Tale was the original, and it was from their third album, not the second album.
Okay, all right.
So, but still, you know, fairly early in their discography.
Yeah.
Pretty cool stuff. So yeah, I from just knowing some of the singles from the Killers, I never put together that they were huge Springsteen fans. Mm-hmm. So, but now I probably will hear some of those other songs really differently knowing that now.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I this one thing, one of the first things I kind of noticed is like, oh, it reminds me of how, you know, Springsteen kind of sings and puts his music together, and more of the vocal stuff and the songwriting for sure.
Well, and to depart a little bit just from this album, and of course we'll come back to it, but in coming across some other things that that the Killers have done, I'm really impressed by how versatile Brandon Flowers is as a vocalist. Because, yeah, if you just hear Mr. Brightside, you get one idea of what his thing is. But then I saw, and actually this was a few weeks back, some research I was doing for a piece I was writing, and I came across a cover that the Killers did of The Hole of the Moon by the Waterboys. And he just like turns into Mike Scott, like for this one song. And then what else did I came across? Ultraviolet by U2. And he nails that.
Yeah.
So he's got this sort of chameleon-like quality as a vocalist. And I mean that in a good way. Like he just doesn't do one thing. He can pull off all these different styles.
It definitely does. It's not easy. It's not easy to do that. I could, you know, vouch for that. How difficult that is. So he's definitely, you know, a great vocalist and something, you know, I definitely strive for, you know, as a singer.
Yeah, and I think it's really impressive. And I think in a way it explains how he's able to pull off this album that's sonically different from some of their earlier material. So, you know, well, you mentioned Quiet Town. I have to agree with you, by the way. I think that was my favorite song, mm-hmm. at least so far from this album. Are there others that, you know, if you were, well, you are talking to somebody about the album, but, you know, if you were talking to a friend you know or somebody and, you know, you said you got to check this album out, where might you, what other tracks might you direct them to?
Well, I like Runaway Horses is another one I enjoy as well. What was the other one? Terrible Thing is another one. Yeah, those two I would direct people to check out for sure.
Like runaway horses in a fever till the end, and every step is a silver prayer in the face of a hard wind. Beer drinking Boy Scouts living life like they ain't stuck on these quicksand streets with their girls in a sling.
The other thing too is that one of the other ways I'm able like relate to some of the stuff they're talking about and singing about again is just having this sort of open range of like land and, you know, to go out and you know, just sort of be free, you know, and have unimpeded access to, you know, just such a pristine wilderness or just a huge sort of massive backyard. You can just go out and do things like hunting and different things. And that to me is always important in my own personal life to be able to have access to, you know, an unimpeded access to land and stuff like that. Probably has a lot to do with where I grew up too. It's just a, you know, such a vast landscapes. We're by the bay there, which is part of the Arctic Ocean, and you know, rivers everywhere and huge lakes. So I think for me, those are some of the other things that jump out at me when I listen to the album.
What seems to be a reaction that, you know, looking at YouTube comments and reading some things that, you know, that's a reaction that a lot of people have listening to this album. I mean, I grew up a suburban kid. So for me, you know, this is not something I relate to directly in terms of my childhood experience. But I mean, to me, it is an interesting and a fascinating album, but I have to say one thing that could keep me from going back to it a lot mm-hmm. is it's difficult. Like you mentioned a Terrible Thing, like that's, you know, that's a heavy, heavy song mm-hmm. and there, you know, quite a few heavy songs, you know, Desperate Things, which I'm now realizing the similarity in the titles, which I hadn't really noticed before. But, you know, one is a story, as far as I understand, about a gay teen who's contemplating suicide in this small town. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is, it's a fascinating story about a police officer who, you know, pulls over a woman who's been beaten by her partner, and then in the end, it sounds like he winds up killing the partner.
I know where he drinks most every night. It's our local hero sports bar. I've got him cuffed and sweating cold. In the back of my patrol car.
Like you said initially, I mean, this is a heavy album. Mm-hmm. Is it difficult for you to kind of take in start to finish, or, you know, not really?
Not really. Not, it doesn't feel difficult for me. That definitely leaves you feeling a little bit nostalgic, for me anyway. I feel, you know, a little bit of a, I don't know, a bit of a, I don't know if sadness describes the feeling, but yeah, I could definitely relate to you. You know, certain people that may not want to keep coming back to this album because of the, you know, really heaviness of it, for sure. But yeah, it is there's some very, very troubling stories in there, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of it is probably, you know, quite true. You know, some of these perhaps maybe stories that he's telling have been experiences in his own personal life, and the people that he's been surrounded by as well. So, and you know, for me, I think as a songwriter, for me, writing about some of those heavy, heavy emotional songs have, in a lot of ways, been, you know, it's been therapeutical. And I think what's really important for me is, like, when I write about something such as, you know, whether it's you know, residential schools and the impact that's had on Indigenous peoples and some of the horrors that went on there, I always try to balance, you know, the negative and try to have, you know, other songs that are more uplifting as well. Or I try to find a way as I kind of go through the song to get to that better place, you know, where it's a little bit more lighter and more uplifting.
They like to take our soil, my name once strong. Someday the wrongs they will come to realize.
So I always made it a conscious decision to, okay, I this is a heavy song, but now I need to do a song about love or something, you know, just to balance that whole thing. And I think it feels like it's almost he's able to, like, sonically with the color he adds, he's almost able to balance all that, I think, you know what I mean?
That's an interesting point, because I'm focusing on the lyrical themes and I'm thinking, God, it's one song after another about difficult relationships and people in crisis. But you're right. Like, so many, I mean, some of the songs, the music is fitting for those heavy themes, but other ones, like the music's really upbeat. And as long as you're not paying attention to the lyrics, which I often don't, they're kind of fun, poppy songs.
Yeah. I think, it's sometimes weird to hear, you know, sort of a very heavy emotional song sound very upbeat, and you know, when you kind of delve into the lyrics and you, like, oh my goodness, you know, what is he singing about? That's terrible. And you don't realize sometimes until you take a deeper look and find out what the song is really about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if this were not an album I was listening for a podcast, I'm sure I would have come away with a little bit of a different impression, because, yeah, there were some songs. I mean, I, like I said, I typically don't pay that much attention to lyrics. In the Car Outside, which is a pretty bleak song lyrically, but it feels like this, like, synth pop, like, almost like a rave number, you know, like, so that's what I could see where, if I wasn't paying attention to the lyrics, I'd, you know, probably leave with a really happy feeling listening to that song.
Yeah. Yeah. I could definitely, you know, I could feel that for sure.
We got a place with a fence and a little grass. I put this film on the windows and it looks like chapel glass. But when she turns, it's like the shadow of the cross don't cast.
It sonically completely, you know, it's sonically different for sure than everything they've done before. And that's why I probably spent a good, I would say a good couple of weeks listening to this album initially, you know, on and off. And then sort of, you know, I haven't really picked it up in the last little while, I would say a year or so. I haven't played too much of this this album, but initially I remember listening to it quite a bit. And, you know, I had it in my headphones too when I was traveling out on the land, just listening to this album and other albums as well. But I really enjoyed you know, their ability to just sort of just peel everything back and to me getting back to really sort of getting back to his roots, I guess, where he came from, and having the stripped down sort of album. It's something I really enjoyed listening to, and did not expect it at all from this band. And I'm glad they made an album like this, you know, for sure. And it certainly helps me and influences me in a lot of ways. And it helps, you know, me sort of, I guess, want to strive to make, you know, music that's similar sounding. And it's for sure inspiring for me to as a singer and a songwriter.
Well, and yeah, I want to pick up on that theme. You've already talked a little bit about the through line between this album and your new album, but before we do talk more about your new album, is there anything else about Pressure Machine that people should know about, things that we haven't talked about that we should talk about, or anything that we've left on the table?
Yeah, I think one other thing, if I'm not mistaken, I was reading about their album, and one of the reasons why they had decided to make this album, I think, was because we were in COVID times.
Right, right.
And, you know, a lot of people were in similar situation, I think. Well, most artists were anyway. And like myself, being so far away from everything in recording studios, you know, we weren't able to create and make music. Obviously it wasn't safe to travel and get together and gather in large groups and, you know, and go and record traditionally like you would for albums prior to all of that. So I think that kind of really, I guess for a lot of people, you were able to just kind of, if there were silver linings and all of that, you know, it would have been, you know, a project like that. And for me, it allowed me to actually focus on my solo, first solo album I put out during COVID times. So it really, I think it allowed people to sort of focus on little projects like this. I think artists especially that were, you know, traditionally going out and recording in these different studios, we're now forced to kind of approach things a little bit differently and create differently than they would have perhaps prior to all of that. I know on my album, everybody worked remotely on that. So, I mean, there was just nobody was recording together in a studio. Everybody kind of had their own little space, which was kind of weird at first, but I don't think anyone really had any choice at the time. But yeah, that was the other thing I remember reading about, one of the reasons for this album that they did was, you know, during COVID, you know, pandemic and everything was really shut down and a lot of restrictions, and it kind of forced them into this whole sort of I wouldn't say forced, but it sort of drove them into that direction of perhaps maybe it was something they wanted to do as well for a while. I know for me, I wanted to do a solo record for a long time and get away from the Midnight Shine stuff, and you know, that allowed me to do it and focus on my solo stuff.
So yeah, when I saw that your first album came out in 2021, that was something I wanted to ask you about, because a lot of albums came out in 2021 that were started in 2018 or 2019 because there were such issues with supply chain and, you know, people just being able to get together and record. So that first album, that all came together during COVID then?
Yeah, it did. I remember, you know, having plans to go down to Nashville to record that first album, and we had already made, you know, plans to do that. I had some songs that were already written that I had worked on prior to all of that, before all that happened, but some of it I had worked on as well during COVID time. So when everything was pretty locked down, so I had partially completed a lot of the songs prior, but then there was probably another half, I would say, that I was working on during that whole process.
So, I mean, that must have been strange because, well, not, maybe not, because, I mean, yeah, you made records with Midnight Shine, but yeah, not a solo project, and doing it in such a, you know, an unusual circumstance. So how did that compare with the second album in terms of the process?
Well, yeah, it was like, if you were to compare the two projects, I mean, I had no idea what to expect the first time, because I've never done anything like that. I had to build a studio. I had to get all the hardware and then learn how to use like the software. So there were so many different things that had to come in, you know, and to come into place, fall into place in order for me to do that. And I had no clue what to expect. And I know the producer, Colin, had already done, I think he said he had done a couple of projects already prior to that. So he kind of had a good handle on things, you know, and how to work remotely. So I trusted him, you know, I put my trust in him, and I said, well, let's do it. You know, I have no clue what I'm about to get myself into, but get it. And, you know, the album ended up turning out great. I mean, it was quite remarkable what we were able to do working under those circumstances. And the second time around, the Precious Diamonds album, the one we just released here a few days ago, that you know, getting to go down and recording like you normally would with other artists in the room, other players in the room, it was a different process for me too, because I've never approached recording with the entire band in the room playing at the same time, everybody. So if you're listening to the album, you'll notice that it has more of a live feel to it, and so that for me was another eye-opener, I think, for like, I haven't played with a band since 2019, so it was like a real eye-opener. And I saw it reminded me of like a documentary I recently watched. I can't remember the name of it, but it's about E Street Band, Bruce Springsteen and E Street Band. And he's really talking about how it's about his relationship with the band and how important his band has been, you know, to his music. And I never really got it, you know, I never really got it up until that point when I was in the room with Colin and his band came in and you know, made that album what it is. And it was just amazing just to be in that room with those guys, and we had a few other players come in and play as well, and I just was just blown away, you know, by how they worked so well together and how they were able to really bring to life those songs, you know, as a band. And I think if it, you know, the two differences for sure were being in the room with those guys and just seeing how they work and seeing how good they are, and just really trying to learn as much as I can seasoned, you know, musicians like that. And then, you know, not seeing how they work previously on the remote stuff, because I just, you know, here's me and my acoustic and doing vocals, doing the bed tracks, and then, okay, we're gonna do our thing now. We'll send you some stuff back in a little while, and then you start getting tracks coming in much later. And it's like, oh wow, you know. So that's different. And of course, like, you're in there the whole time, and you're the singer. And I always felt like in the second album down there in Nashville, I felt like I felt like I needed to bring a certain energy, you know, to every time we were laying down, even just like the bed tracks. You know, I was always trying to sing and try to give some kind of an energy or whatever to each song, because I noticed that the band kind of would respond to it, you know, differently. You know, if I was singing kind of lazy, I felt like the band, you know, may respond differently than that. Or if I delivered it a little bit more emotion, or, you know, more punch to certain parts, I could definitely feel the difference in the playing in the room. So I always tried to bring every, you know, bring the energy every time. And because I felt like there was just, you know, we were all sort of responding to each other, you know, in the room. So that was a whole different experience for me.
Wow. Well, and you've referenced your producer a few times, Colin. That's Colin Linden, and he's worked with a lot of artists, but Bruce Cockburn, I think, probably is maybe one that most people would be familiar with. So, what sort of producer is he to work with? Like, what's the MO like in the studio?
He's great. I mean, he's so easy to work with. I'd say he's probably the easiest producer I've ever recorded with to date. And I mean, I've only worked with maybe three or four other producers, but by far, I think he's been the easiest producer to work with. And he's good in many ways. Like, one example I would use is that if I bring my ideas, I always try to capture my ideas in the demos, whether if it's a guitar thing or a harmony thing or something that I kind of, oh, this is what I'm thinking, I try to grab it in the demo phase, so it's there. So so sometimes producers won't, you know, use that stuff. They'll say, "Yeah, we'll use this, we'll do that, we don't need that," or whatever. It sounds too icky, or so that's always tough when you're an artist and, you know, your ideas are just kind of getting, you know, stomped all over. But you know, he's great because he's like, he uses that, and he uses, you know, sort of that as sort of a little like a foundation. Sometimes he'll make it less, you know, or he'll make it, you know, a little bit more than what you've sort of had at the idea stage. So he's really good at that, and that's one way I really enjoy working with Colin. And he's always open to, you know, ideas. He doesn't shut you down, unless, of course, you know, he doesn't believe that it's going to make the song any better. He'll just say, yeah, you know, you might do this to the song, or and so it's always open discussion. It's always you know, you feel like you're part of the process every step of the way with Colin. And he doesn't come in and try to change the songs lyrically or anything like that. You know, I've had that experience too. He's you know, sometimes will suggest like a phrasing thing when it comes to lyrics, and the delivery of the vocals. And you know, he'll pretty much be as much involved as you want him to be. If you want him to be, you know, background vocals, he'll say, yeah, I'll sing on your record. Yeah, he'll play as much as you want him to play on the record. And you know, you hear a lot of his playing on both those albums, the debut and then the sophomore album. A lot of Colin's playing is on both those records. So, and just learning, like, again, I've learned so much from him in the last little while. And as an artist, I think, for me, I've always tried to learn from other people in the industry, and I've I want to get better. I want to get better as a songwriter, as a player. And, those are the kind of people that you want to surround yourself with, who are so, so gracious with their time and their knowledge and wanting to, teach others and help them, develop their craft.
Well, it sounds like a really cool process, and the final product is fantastic. I mean, it's a great album. I do hope that people will go and check it out. And also, I hope people will go check out a video that you did to accompany the album for the song Precious. And I admit that I didn't pick this up right away because sort of borrows a template from Alanis Morissette.
Oh, yeah.
And the Ironic video. And that's a video I don't think I'd seen very many times, so I didn't make the connection. But then, kind of watching them back to back, it's like, oh, this is super clever. So how did that concept come about?
Well, it's we had the director came up with the idea, a gentleman named Jorge, who's Winnipeg based. We ran into him a little while back prior to filming that video, and we asked him if he would be interested in wanting to do a video for us for that song Precious. So we left it with him for a couple of days, and he came back and said, definitely, I'm on board, I'm interested, here's what I'm thinking. And that's where this whole idea came from, the Alanis Morissette video. And there's three different versions of me in the video or whatever. There's a music guy, then there's a hunter guy, and then there's just regular loungy dad guy. The music guy is in the driver's seat and he's picking up these two different versions of who Adrian, and they're driving to the show, right, to do this show on the stage. And they're joined at the end by these beautiful young dancers that came up and really made the video what it is. It's such a fun little video, fun little project that we did, and to top it all off, these dancers came and did a wonderful job for us.
Yeah, no, it's a great video. So hope people check it out, and if you're not that familiar with the Alanis Morissette video, do what I did and play them back to back, and you'll appreciate it, I think, even more. So fantastic video. So, well, I wanted to ask you about one more thing, Adrian, and that is, I know at the outset of the show, I had mentioned that you are working on a book that will be published by Penguin Random House Canada on your growing up in Attawapiskat. So how did this come about, and when can we hope to see the book in print?
It first came about a little while back over... would have been during COVID when the opportunity was presented to us, and it was a connection through Colin, actually, one of his bandmates, Tom Wilson. I had done a series of shows with him just prior to COVID, and we were having dinner one day, and we were just talking about where we come from and our stories, and I'd read his book. Tom had a book out at the time, and I had read his book, and we were just talking about stuff. And he was asking me, a bunch of questions, getting to know me a little bit more, and that led to this whole book opportunity. He contacted his he had a contact at Penguin Random House Canada for his project, and reach out to him and say, hey, there's this guy I know, check him out. And he sent him a bunch of information about me. And they reached out to me and said, would you be interested in, writing a book, doing a book? And I said, what am I going to write about? And they said, well, whatever you want. It could be about Attawapiskat and where you come from. And I think, If you look at Attawapiskat, we've been in media quite a bit over the last probably 10-15 years. There's been crisis after crisis up there, it seems, and we've sort of been painted a certain way by mainstream media. And I think it was important for not only for them but for me, I think, as well, as somebody who's lived there my entire life, and to hear the story coming from somebody who's actually been on the ground there and who's lived there. I think it's important for some people, and for me, it's definitely very important to tell that story from that perspective.
Do you have an idea of when that might be out?
Probably about a year and a half out still.
Okay.
I'm working on delivering the manuscript. I would say I'm about halfway through that now. I'm getting, there's been a huge learning curve for me, like lots of learning in the last while. Now it feels like I could see there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and we're sort of nearing that point where we are able to get a manuscript together, and then you know, that'll be shaped from there. And then there's a lot of back and forth after that point. So I think about year and a half, I would say.
Okay. Well, I'm sure it will go by fast. So it sounds like a long time, but it's not as long as it probably seems. So it's a question I ask pretty much every episode, and it feels semi-obnoxious because we're here talking about an album that you've just released and talking about a book that you're working on. But musically, is there anything in the pipeline, or at least in the planning stage at this point?
Well, I'm always writing new music. I just I've been doing some co-writing and stuff like that. For not my own personal projects, but for writing for other albums and stuff. That's something I've been doing, and I'm writing again for hopefully doing another record down the road. But I'm thinking that I would like to have some music accompany the book as well. So I've been thinking about that and how I make that all happen. So I think something to sort of like a spin-off, you know, for the book, but that involves music. I don't want to give away all the details, but it's something I'm pretty excited about.
Well, that sounds really cool. And so maybe, again, these are details that you can't or don't want to talk about at this point, but would that music include lyrics in Cree?
Yeah, I think quite possibly as something I'm starting to really explore now. You know, I did two Cree songs on this new album, and they've had such a amazing response from all, you know, from all people, not just Indigenous people. And to continue to draw on that culture and that language is definitely something I'm going to continue doing.
All right. Well, lots to look forward to there. So I guess the one thing left to do here is to make sure that people can find you. So I know you've got your website, but is there anywhere on social media or, you know, any places at all where people should keep up with what we can look forward to seeing from you and hearing?
Yeah. I mean, if you know, outside of music, you can go onto any of my social media platforms and kind of see what I'm up to. You know, I'm always posting stuff where I'm out on the land and just nice pictures of where I come from, whether I'm out with my family and stuff like that. So it's not always about music on the social media stuff. Facebook, I try to keep just strictly music. But if you check out, if you're on TikTok, if you're there, you'll find, you know, me doing whatever trends. You might find me doing a trend or something, or you might, you know, see me out on the land or doing some other things on TikTok. But yeah, you'll find me on X as well, Facebook, TikTok, and now Threads, I guess. We're on there too, so. But my handles are Attaboy Adrian.
All right. Excellent. So everybody can look for those, and you know, just a lot to look forward to. So Adrian, thank you so much for joining me here. And really appreciate the time, appreciate the introduction to a really cool album. And I wish you the best with the album and everything else that you have going on.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
All right. Well, and thank you all so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this. And we'll be back again with another episode, with another album, another guest. But until then, everybody, please do take care. Be careful out there. And of course, listen to some great music. Hey, they are. Hey, they are.